Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson. The guest co-hosts come one after another, and joining me this week, there can be no other than my actual brother from another mother. Or, no, from not another mother.
It's the same mother.
Yeah, CNET's Andy Hoyle.
Hi.
Yeah, not to be confused with Handy Oil, which is a very different thing that I do make use of, but for very different purposes.
Absolutely.
We're going to do something now, Andy, that we have never done on the show before.
Oh, my God.
And I'm not using hyperbole. I'm genuinely meaning this. We're going to go completely off script and talk about something that is literally happening right now that's just popped up on my screen, which is that Dyson has cancelled its super secret electric car.
Oh.
Officially, I just saw this pop up on Wired, and it said that the company had developed a fantastic car, according to James Dyson, who issued this statement.
But of course he's going to say that.
But one that could not be made commercially viable. He said that the company had tried to find a buyer for its electric car division, which employs about 500 people in the UK alone, but presumably couldn't. It says that its first cars had already been developed and were being tested, but now it's going to close its electric car facilities in the UK and Singapore. Now, this is a big blow for Dyson, because this could have potentially been, you know, I think people had, being nice, talked about Dyson as being kind of like the UK's Tesla in terms of its potential. It's coming from an eccentric developer, inventor who's created some things, and it would be high end but high performing.
They've talked, I've heard Dyson described very often as the Apple of homewares, in that they take an existing product but do it very, very well, slap a high price on it, and have quite simplistic branding.
Yeah. So, but and if it had done this with a car, it could have been a very interesting product, but apparently it couldn't be made commercially viable. And I do wonder how much, and I'm sure this we'll learn more about this over the coming days and weeks, how much Brexit folded into this. Because Dyson, I mean, he was controversially a Brexit supporter, but he did move, after supporting Brexit, he then moved the company's headquarters to Singapore. And now this is happening, but this is affecting both UK and Singapore. And I just wonder, how much of that lack of commercial viability was basically made more of a problem because of the political situation.
I would say that I'm not entirely surprised. I mean, Dyson is not a company that has any grounding in automotive world, and there are a lot of things at play there that need to be considered, that need to go into creating that product. But those supply chains are entirely different to what he's done. So even if it's not a political thing, this is about talking about building from scratch an entirely new arm, a massive arm to a business. And this isn't something that's easy to just, it's not like making another hand dryer. Building a car, the amount of legislation, legal stuff, testing, everything that has to go into this is so unfathomably huge that it comes as no surprise that it ended up being commercially unviable, even for a company the size of Dyson.
And of course, it's up against some massive competition that, on a logistical standpoint, has a lot more experience and existing partnerships and deals. Because even in an electric car, huge amounts of what makes a car is the same whether it's electric or combustion engine powered.
Yeah.
What makes it different, obviously, is the electrics and the experience and things like that. But you can save an awful lot if you're already able to make half a car, and the other half is just what you're having to newly develop, whereas Dyson's was having to basically develop the entire thing, or at least develop new partnerships to support it.
And I didn't follow the story particularly closely. I don't know how they were going about it. Now, from what you're saying, I'm getting the impression that Dyson were doing this entirely in-house with new teams, whereas for me, what I'd have felt would have been an easier route to market would have been either to buy a smaller existing company, use their technology, develop it, but also get access to more of their supply chains, or to essentially partner with a company, almost licensing the Dyson name onto what they are doing, co-designing this, making sure that it fits very much in line with what James Dyson wants to achieve.
I mean, it's not really the Dyson model to go down the kind of white labeling or co-developing.
It's also not the Dyson model to make a car.
Nope, that's a fair point.
If you're going to do something different, then you need to have a different strategy of how you're going to get there.
I mean, it's actually something that works out probably quite well for the company, because it's a private company, and it's spent, according to this Wired write-up, Dyson said it spent nearly £200 million on things like test tracks and research and R&D in the UK. And that's only really within the last couple of years that we know this product's been underway.
Renting test tracks, I assume. You can't even make a test track for $200 million.
Well, I don't know, but I mean that's about $250 million, and this, you know, from a private company, so it's not having tons of extra investment coming into this.
But that's not a lot of investment for an entire car division. Like that is actually relatively small. That's in line with, you know, a manufacturer like Noble, who is a car manufacturer based in a shed in Leicester. You know, that's
really,
yeah, like, yeah. It's not, you know, that's not a lot of money in cars. The last thing I was going to say, just very quickly, is that presumably from that, if he's talking about we've got really good technology, they may well have, and I don't know if this is covered in the news story you're reading, but they may well have licenses and patents that they could theoretically either license out or sell.
Dyson legendarily has a huge stock of patents, tons and tons and tons of patents. You're almost certainly right, and things like this, an electric car is not a single product. Like, an electric car is hundreds, if not thousands, of individual products, many of which may very well go in to become other things and make other products better. So it won't be written off as a failure of the research. And in fact, there's a quote here from Dyson who says this is not a product failure or a failure of the team, for whom this news will be hard to hear and digest. Like, I kind of agree with that. If I was working on it, you'd kind of know that there's a whole bunch of stuff you probably developed that will go into making the next robotic vacuum cleaner. They'll go into making another electric product. Maybe you'll get into making e-scooters or something.
Or will be licensed and become a revenue stream for Dyson, which is...
Could be.
Yeah.
Well, we'll surely learn more about this as we progress through the next few days. That story was not in our lineup. We literally just went off script to talk about that. So details may emerge after we have finished recording this, in which case we'll come back to it next week. But if you have thoughts in the meantime, you know where to send them. If you don't, it's hello@uktechshow.com. Representatives from Sony have revealed substantial new details about its upcoming PlayStation 5, or PlayStation 5 for our German listeners, in an interview with Wired. New features and improvements will include sophisticated haptics in the controller, hardware-based ray tracing, it's good for graphics and lights and things like that, a UI that lets users see in-game information before launching into a game, and additionally, Sony confirmed that the console will be called the PlayStation 5, and then it's going to launch before the end of 2020. Now, that little write-up there is all from Wired's sister site, Ars Technica. Other notable things, Andy, that I think is worth mentioning is that the PS5 is going to have very, very fast solid-state drives, apparently. It's going to use 100-gigabyte optical discs, 4K Blu-ray discs, no less, and I love this bit.
I'm surprised, just to touch on that it's even got an optical drive at all, because I did strongly suspect that this generation of console would probably do away with optical almost altogether.
And yet,
here we are.
And yet, here we are. It hasn't. Yeah. Bear in mind, there's a huge reason to use optical discs still, because you can then sell things in a store. People like to put things on shelves. Mm-hmm. To get rid of that would be to get rid of quite a large part of a distribution chain, I would imagine, is my guess here. And the other thing that I mentioned, or rather was about to mention, until I was rudely interrupted by my brother, was you may be able to free up part of that SSD space by deleting parts of an installed game, you know, like a single player mode or a multiplayer mode if you only want one or the other, or if you finished with one or the other, which I think is really interesting. And it's similar to how on, certainly on the Xbox, I'm not sure if this is true on the PS4, still, you can play parts of a game before it's finished installing.
Yeah, so presumably, if you can uninstall certain elements of the game, if I'm right in understanding, if, for example, Gears of War has the Horde mode, where you are basically, it's just an arena and wave after wave of enemies come at you, it's very social, very online, multiplayer-based. If that's the only element of a game that you repeatedly play, could you uninstall all the rest of it, the major story campaign, the rest of the stuff, and basically just load into Horde mode?
I think that is, from my understanding so far, that is the intention. There are many things, shared assets, that would be across them all. Character models, music, all that sort of thing. But I would imagine anything that is not required in that instance by Horde mode, yes. What would be more interesting, this may be a thing that we just don't know about yet, but I would doubt, is actually whether you could just buy those component parts. Like, instead of charging an upfront fee for a game or charging a subscription that covers multiple games like Microsoft does with its Game Pass, you could actually say, well, you know what? I do want this game, but I only want the multiplayer game. So I'm just going to buy that bit. Or it could just be a way of teasing people into the game by saying, well, hey, you can buy Horde mode. It's £5 or $5 or whatever. Mm. And then maybe you get into it and you think, you know what, actually, I quite like this. I think maybe I'll play the campaign or I'll play the other multiplayer modes. And then you can be upsold other parts of the game that can then be downloaded on the fly as needed. Because that's something that you can only really do with a downloaded game. You can't realistically do that on a disc because you either need to buy the whole disc or not. But all this led me to think that managing that sort of thing kind of goes against what a console is meant to be in the first place. A games console, in my head, maybe I'm just being a traditionalist, is it's plug and play. And we've moved a long way away from that, obviously, because we have the whole updates problem, which you and I have talked about at great length before now. When you put a disc in that you haven't played for a while, it's just update after update after update and all this kind of stuff. But the fundamentals of what a console is still, but you can put a disc in a thing and press play and you can do some fun things. Mm-hmm. I think when we start talking about being able to selectively uninstall certain bits of a game and having you know, something maybe on optical disc, something maybe on subscription, like, it kind of, to me, it just, the whole thought process that goes into how am I getting my games and how am I managing my collection of games, it just makes it very, very complicated. And I wonder whether really we've actually seen the end of games consoles, and really what we're talking about now is just, it's just a different type of PC.
Yeah, I'd say that's very much the case, but in terms of game delivery, that's already what we've seen. The whole thing of having dominant gaming platforms for marketplaces and game streaming. I mean, it was a few years ago when there was I can't remember what the game service was. It was
OnLive.
OnLive, yeah, that was it. You know, that tried to do this cloud-based server gaming, and it didn't work because the technology wasn't there. People didn't have the internet speeds that were required, certainly not for mobile. And as a result, the gameplay, I remember they had Assassin's Creed 3, I think it was at the time, or one of them, and it was very poor. The frame rate dropped to like 5 FPS. It was basically unplayable. And but now that is very much a thing that we're having, and certainly we've seen, like, with Apple Arcade as well, because
I did an extra message which goes out to our other patrons about Apple Arcade specifically. We've not really talked about it on the main show before. My what I like about Apple Arcade is just that it allowed me to try different types of games than I would ever normally play, and I liked that. But it's not the same as cloud-based gaming, and you've inadvertently or otherwise transitioned into where I wanted this conversation to go anyway, which is cloud gaming, cloud-based gaming, essentially the console experience of the future, which may be delivered on what we call now a games console, but ultimately it is you pay a price, you press a button to play a thing, and the thing appears and you have fun with it. You don't have to think about storage space, about where you're saving files to, whether you're running out of space, anything like that. You are just able to play a game, with a bonus that with things like xCloud or Google Stadia, you're going to be able to play it on a wide range of hardware types and over a wide variety of network types as well.
That's 100% where it's going, and that should be no surprise, because that's where we've already gone with things like photo storage and videos. Like, with iCloud storage, Google Drive storage, most of my stuff is not saved locally. It's saved in the cloud already. So when I boot up things like Lightroom, it's synced across devices, and that's already there. I don't need to manage that local storage. And the same will be true for gaming.
I know that. I mean, you do have. You've started doing this YouTube video series,
yeah.
And I was watching one of yours the other day. Actually, I think it was the one with the car under the. Under the cave,
the Aston Martin,
the Aston Martin
Superleggera,
and you were talking in that video about how, it was sort of like 50, 60 different exposures,
yeah,
that you just use certain selected bits to get that very artistic lighting effect.
Yeah.
But you were like, this file size is like 8 or 9 gigabytes or something for just one image.
Yeah.
So how the hell do you do that in the cloud? Because even today, an 8 gigabyte file is going to take two or three minutes potentially to download, even on a very good connection.
Yeah, well, that's still somewhere an occasion where you would need to have local files. But those are that level of processing is infrequent. I would say for the most part, I'm talking about working with individual RAWs. Working on a single image. But Adobe is very good. So I tend to do a lot of my processing on Lightroom on the iPad, and that basically downloads and saves locally a much smaller resolution version, which allows you to do all the actual work you need to on it. But when it comes to actually exporting the file, it then exports using the file it pulls from its actual servers, which is a much better way of using both your internet capabilities and your local storage.
But your point is that everything's moving to the cloud,
yeah,
and it makes things simpler.
Yeah. Internet connections are such that it is now very common for people to have access to over 100 megasecond, which is more than enough that you would need for this sort of gaming, even at a very high resolution for demanding games. That's more than you'd necessarily need. Obviously, there's latency and upload issues is still comes into play, but theoretically, we are closer than we've ever been to being able to have streaming options for AAA titles that are very, very demanding. And certainly, if you look at what's going on with 5G and the speeds that you can achieve on 5G.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of conversations around even things like Fortnite, because people can now play competitively Fortnite on mobile on the go because their speeds are there to do that, whereas they weren't with 4G.
I've actually got a video that I just submitted the voiceover for that I've been doing for Bloomberg about 5G and what 5G is going to do for cloud-based gaming, for exactly what you just said,
yeah,
which makes the point that I recorded in my piece unoriginal, because it's been had before, but I've filed it already.
Well,
but you're
just
right.
Just publish that and just hold this for unknown technical reasons until Tuesday.
Yeah, I need to spend more time with my family.
Yeah.
Actually, that doesn't work in this context.
Because you're spending time with your family right now.
That's what I'm doing. Okay. But the whole reason to have this conversation is to go around the idea of the need for a games console, because it just feels to me now like the console is just a PC, and the actual console experience is going to be in the domain of cloud gaming and simplicity of access, which is tablets and phones and things.
I think that's true. If you look at the Nintendo Switch, and I love the Nintendo Switch, but that is very much a more traditional console as far as I'm concerned. In what we kind of used to know, it is much more plug and play. You get the game,
mm-hmm,
and off you go. Very infrequently do I find I have to do any kind of updates to the games or to the console itself. But it's also quite family focused, so it's very easy to do. It's not, you don't need to really know a lot about tech in order to use it, which in itself makes it feel more like how a console used to be. It's more like booting up a Mega Drive than it is booting up a Xbox One X.
Mm.
But that's still, the marketplace is still where I buy all the games. I almost never buy the cartridges for them.
So you mean you're buying the digital downloads?
Digital
still.
Downloads, yeah. And that's largely because one of the critical reason, when I had my Nintendo
this.
Switch nicked in Barcelona, because it's full of thieves there.
That means stolen for American listeners.
Yeah, half-inched. Because I had the cartridge version of Mario Kart in the console, I couldn't re-download it. But had I have bought it for the same price from the online store, all I'd have done is just press re-download, as I was able to do with Zelda Breath of the Wild, Skyrim, all the other games that I'd got. I could just re-download them because they were registered to me. But that one, I had to spend £50 on to re-buy it because I'd had it stolen. So from then on, I was like, well, I'm never buying a physical cartridge for this. There's absolutely no need.
Well, let us know any thoughts you have on either the PlayStation 5 and its projected features, or the role of a console in your life. If you've been tickled by any of the thought fingers that Andy and I have pointed in your delicate areas, then just let us know. hello@uktechshow.com. Andy, you have been using an iPhone 11 Pro, which I see is in one of your hands.
No, it's not.
What's that phone?
This was the XS Max.
Oh, that's the XS Max. Oh, what's that? Oh,
that's the Galaxy Fold. The iPhone 11's in my bag.
I wanted to talk about the iPhone 11, because everyone's talked about it being really good for photography.
Yeah.
I haven't given it a run for its money. You have. You've done, I mean, I think you did a magazine feature or something, didn't you? Shooting.
Yeah.
It's not out yet.
No, it's upcoming.
Upcoming, okay. And the pictures that I've seen, at least, that you've shown me, they do look very impressive. And people have talked about how impressive the camera is. But when I said to you that I was thinking about buying the 11 Pro and upgrading from my XS Max, you were like, no.
No.
Don't do it.
No.
And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But I thought you could give us your impressions of the new iPhone as someone who has used it professionally and extensively, at least since it's been announced.
Well, my impressions and whether or not you should upgrade are the same thing. It is... there's a lot of talk about it being a very dull launch for Apple, even though it's supposed to be a major upgrade year. And I'd agree. Fundamentally, the phone hasn't changed. It doesn't feel any more powerful because it already had more power than it needed. They have messed about with the cameras, the fact that the standard 11 no longer has a telephoto, which a lot of people will have been used to. It's now wide and normal, and the Pro adds back that telephoto that you once would have had.
Almost certainly because it wasn't being used.
Yeah, and they've also seen on competing phones that the super wide has been the headline feature and people have been loving going out. And
I think the most recent Huawei phones...
Samsung does, yeah. OnePlus does. They've all been leading with... Well, most of them have got triple camera setups already. Mm. So it's super wide, normal, and telephoto zoom.
Of course, the Nokia PureView, isn't it, that has about six cameras, I think.
No, I've got too many. It's silly. But adding the wide-angle lens into your camera mix on an iPhone really is great because it adds this whole extra way of shooting. Before, the normal was reasonably wide, but not super wide. I think it was like maybe a 25 to 30 mil equivalent, which is fine. But going super wide, it allows you to get these really dramatic shots.
What's super wide? Like 12 mil?
I think it's equivalent to 12 or 14, I think. It is as in equivalent from a 35 mil camera.
Yeah, because my old setup was a Canon-based setup, and one of my favorite lenses on that was a 12 mil, and that was called ultra wide.
Yeah.
So it must be comparable to
that. Yeah, it is. It is very, very wide. And it's one of those things that... I think for a lot of people, what they want to use their phone for, particularly when they're traveling, a super wide-angle lens is more useful than a telephoto lens. If you're out walking in the hills, you want to capture that whole dramatic scene in front of you. You want to capture the hills sweeping away. If you're in some beautiful Italian town, you want to use the wide-angle lens to capture the whole of the market that you're standing in.
I love the fact that you are, I know for a fact, you are describing a very specific use case that you did.
Yeah, but I did.
When you were
in
Tuscany or wherever it was.
Yeah, of course. So like it is... Because the thing, you know, I'm literally like, this is what I do. This is what I've used it for. It's great. It does that very, very well. The quality is superb.
You're talking now about the iPhone 11.
I'm talking specifically about the iPhone 11 Pro wide angle lens.
If it's so good, why am I not? Why shouldn't I buy one?
Because that lens is the only reason,
right,
to upgrade. The only reason. The rest of the cameras are the same. The quality for everyday shooting, you're not going to notice any kind of difference. The power in the phone in terms of the processor, its gaming ability, you're not going to notice any difference. Yes, they have got a new chip, but day by day I've seen no improvements because obviously you've already got on the top phone more than you need. Now, if you had maybe an older iPhone, an iPhone 6, iPhone 7, then upgrade to the 11 Pro and get the new one and keep that for several years. But from the generation that's just gone, there is absolutely not enough reason to do that unless you have to have that lens. If you are getting your phone just for photography and that's the only thing you care about is having that wide angle lens, then consider it.
But you know what? This is why it's so particularly interesting, is because that is kind of the position I'm in. Because as you know, and as some listeners know, my life lives on my iPad Pro. That's why I always buy the new one every year when it comes out. My iPhone, I don't really use anything on it. I have a podcast app that I use, Overcast, and I use the camera. And obviously I use it as a phone on occasion, but even then I'm more often I'm using the iPad with the Bluetooth, with headphones and things for that. So for me, the only reason that I still even carry around a standard phone as well, because I have an Apple Watch and I have the iPad, is because I want to have that camera. And that spawned my little internal conversation over the last couple of days.
Well, whether you should upgrade.
No. About the fact that I also have a Sony Alpha A7 R2, you know, one of the best DSLRs in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I don't use it very often because I only use it when I'm actually going out to take photos.
To take photos.
Holidays, family events, stuff like that, work. But then it's justified because it's heavy and it's big. But actually what I was thinking is what's heavy about that camera is the glass.
Yeah.
It's the lens. Because the two main lenses that I use, one is a 25mm Zeiss Optics Batiste thing. It is heavy as... Mm-hmm. It is incredible.
High quality glass weighs a lot.
It's exactly. And the other is a Sony, it's a G series.
24-105 f4.
Correct. Well remembered. Well brained. Yeah, exactly. Which cost almost as much as the camera itself. And so I don't really want to carry those around. But what it made me think is instead of buying a new iPhone for that camera, why am I not just buying
a new lens
that allows me to take my actually very lightweight but very high-performing DSLR wherever I go in the same way that I take my iPad everywhere I go? So that's what I did, and I ordered a new lens today.
Yeah.
And that is actually what I'm using as considering the upgrade versus buying an iPhone 11.
I think that's good. You may, and
I know I'm an outlier in that.
You
sense,
are an outlier, and also in a privileged position of being able to afford all this stuff. Whereas, you know, a lot of people who are upgrading their phones less and less. I think it's moved to typically people are upgrading every 3 years, where it was every 1 to 2.
Bear in mind, I justify it as I spend my life talking about it, so I feel I should put my money where my mouth is.
You do, yeah, you should, and you also need to be aware of what you're talking about. You know,
my T-shirt's from H&M.
This stuff, yeah, it's fine. You also don't have a car, so
true.
You know, I definitely don't think it's worth upgrading if you've got one of the most recent iPhones. I would even say as far as the maybe even the 10. If you've got a 10 that's in good condition, don't bother upgrading. If you've got something older, I just don't think it's worth it. But the thing is, what I find interesting is still with this new iPhone, when I took it on my trip. So basically, I went around the Highlands of Scotland with it. I took a McLaren 600LT, Spider supercar, because why not? And a great old time shooting it all on the iPhone.
Someone's got a terrible job, hasn't he? You should point out, it sounds like a holiday. No, all of that was for work.
Yeah, it's for work. And
quote, unquote.
Yeah. It was for work, and it was good work, and I've got a really cool piece coming out on it, and I'm really excited for it. But even then, because I wanted to see, my plan was to really see how close I can get the results from my iPhone to match what I would do with my pro camera, which is a Canon 5D4, and turns out very, very similar. But I approached it in a similar way. So I shot, for the most part, using the Moments app. So I shot in RAW. Hmm. I also used, well, normally I swear by Moments lenses. So Moment make phone cases, and you clip onto their phone cases their lenses. I think you've got a set. They do various wide angle or zoom lenses. They also started doing their own screw in filters, like neutral density filters, circular polarizers, and filter mounts for you to use third party filters. Now, for me, that's critical. Everything I do, if I'm shooting landscapes, I will usually use Lee filters, which is another filter company, which now I can attach onto my phone. I can use the same professional lenses I use when I'm shooting with my Canon camera on my iPhone. And when I'm shooting in RAW on the iPhone, that means that I have complete control over everything I'm doing, and I can get as good as I need to get. I publish my shots from my iPhone in our magazine, in our print edition. Now, that is something that you would never have expected from a phone even a couple of years ago.
I just want to play devil's advocate, and I know you'll have an answer for this because you are a professional photographer, but surely, given the sensor size, mm-hmm. I mean, you're capturing a tenth of the light on the sensor of an iPhone
yeah.
versus a full-frame SLR, which you're...
Yeah,
your Canon is, and which my Sony Alpha is, mm-hmm.
and also I'm using faster, brighter, better glass on Canon. Mm. But I mean, the issues, the main issues, and if we're going to get technical into photography, why not? The main problem with an iPhone is the dynamic range. You know, you can easily, very easily, blow out your skies and have and if you expose for the ground, or have a completely black ground if you expose for the sky. Using the standard iPhone camera, there's obviously the auto HDR, which does a very, very good job of bringing that under control. But if you're shooting in RAW, I use a graduated neutral density filter, and that allows you to match the exposure of the sky. It darkens the sky using a physical filter on the front of a lens.
Is that like when you have the little blue strip on a car windscreen that makes the sky darker, but not the road?
That sort of thing, yeah. It basically darkens the sky that little bit, which means that your exposure between sky and ground is even overall. It's just using these filters and things to help the limited capabilities of the iPhone, with the air quotes going on, in order to, you can use that equipment to get the best results that you can. And then when you're processing in Lightroom from a RAW file, bearing in mind that processing in Lightroom on the iPhone is the same as processing in Lightroom on the desktop using the same app, you can get the most incredible results that I look at, and I'm like, I cannot tell whether I did that on a phone or camera. Some of the shots I showed to people, other photographers, like, what did I take that on, phone or camera? And they said, well, definitely camera. I was like, nope, phone.
I mean, you're making a very strong case, despite your intentions, that actually you should upgrade. But I suppose what you're saying is that that is also true of some of the more recent models, and not just...
That is completely true. Yeah, that this is not related to the iPhone 11 Pro. This is related to just the general quality of the recent iPhones. And I will also say the same goes for Galaxy S10 Plus, and I'm sure the new Pixel that's coming out. You know, it's about how you use these things as much as anything else. So as I say, I completely swear by using Moment accessories and the Moment app, because that gives you raw shooting, whereas natively on the iPhone, you still can't shoot in RAW.
I do more video than you, and I actually use the it's called Filmic Pro paired with Luma Touch.
Yeah.
Because again, you get much better controls, particularly over things like aspect ratio and things like that, that cuts down the amount of post-processing that you need. It's actually doing it in real time on device at the point of recording, but non-destructively, so you can go back and make adjustments if you need to.
You could also shoot in like CineLog, I think.
You get much different, much more controls. I mean, it's a lot of this really then comes down to software as well, and I shouldn't be surprised, because I'm recording this on a professional mixing desk plugged into an iPad Pro. I will be editing this in software on an iPad Pro using the same workflow as I used to use on a Mac using Logic Pro 10. Mm. And like you, I use Lightroom on the subscription-based Lightroom product on the iPad for processing RAW photography. And the iPad Pro is extremely quick and capable of that.
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of my work on the iPad, professional work, big professional shoots I will do on the iPad. I would do more, and I almost certainly will be doing more, when Adobe releases full-fat Photoshop on the iPad. I usually have to default back to my MacBook when I need to do bigger projects, when I'm working with layers in Photoshop, when I'm doing the sort of stuff that I can't do. If it's just a single image retouching, you know, exposure, color, contrast, that sort of thing, that's, Lightroom is great for that. Anything else I have to go to Photoshop for. I am looking forward to seeing what they do with Photoshop on the iPad, because the demo they showed off when they had like a graphic artist working with a document that was 60 layers deep, high resolution, you know, real-time effects being used on there. That's what I would need from this on a car shoot if I'm, you know, using strobe on a car, as you said before. I can have an image which is 40 individual full resolution RAW files, each one with masks applied, and then effects laid over the top. That's huge. The processing power is immense, and the file sizes are enormous. Whether I can do that on an iPad when full fat Photoshop arrives, I'm going to be really excited to find out.
I'm sure we'll get you back on to talk about that. I'm sure we won't need to because you'll probably write about it for CNET. But,
sure will.
But that we've run along on that, but I think it was worthwhile because if I say so myself, it was very good. But if you have thoughts on this, to the contrary, to the not contrary, you can send them to hello@uktechshow.com.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup. Topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UK Tech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
Well, text message keeps you informed about the British tech landscape, of course, but let's check in with our good friends, and they are good friends, at Daily Tech News Show in the US and hear what's been happening in the wider world of tech over the last week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we talk with Ariel Waldman about the tech you use to survive and study extremophiles in Antarctica. We discuss the new PlayStation 5 details, share some tales on how even the tech savviest can get fished if you're not careful, look over the increasingly competitive market to put things in your ears, earbuds, they call them, and a deep discussion of the effect of China's policies on U.S. tech companies. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Andy, for being here, of course. We had an amazingly fun discussion, actually, in the Patreon version of the show this week, all around Uber deciding to let people sort of alert drivers to the pets that they may or may not wish to bring along with them in the ride. And that conversation took a massive turn into the bizarre. I got to share my story about the time I took a cat in a cab where the cab driver had a phobia of cats. And Andy talked about taking ostriches on a plane.
I was right. There's the emotional support turkey and the emotional support kangaroo that flew emotional support duck.
Okay. Well, it
called
could,
Daniel.
Daniel, the support duck. Well, anyway, this is going to make no sense to people not listening to the Patreon version. So, if you do want to try Patreon, of course, and support us, you can do so and get that out. That is out now. And thank you to all of our patrons supporting us every week. You are the best people in the world who aren't performing life-saving surgery. And some of you may very well be performing that as well, although hopefully not simultaneously, because I would not like to be the soundtrack to somebody's thoracic surgery. Andy, why don't you tell people where they can find more of your opinions and your facts and other things about you, yourself, Andy Hoyle?
The best place to find anything about me is with the handle @BatteryHQ, which you can plug into Instagram or Twitter. Instagram is where I do most of my photography. I have also recently launched my own YouTube channel, which goes behind the scenes on my photo shoots. I do both professionally and personally. Find that on YouTube by searching for Andrew Langson Hoyle Photography, or again, Battery HQ, and you'll definitely be able to find it there. I've just started that, and I'm very excited. So if you're interested in photography or hearing the handsome face, which surely must be attached to this voice, you can go and watch that and subscribe.
We'll include a link to Andy's YouTube channel as well in the MP3 description. So if you have a look in your podcatching app or obviously in the show notes at uktechshow.com, Andy's just shown me a picture of a lobster. Why?
Because that giant live lobster was taken genuinely on a US internal flight as an emotional support lobster.
Wow, there must be a massive clause in the contract to allow that.
Yep.
Bye.